We are back here on Monday Night Talk, of course, heard on 95.9 WATD, and we have a nice little segment here. Actually, we're gonna start things with Attorney Adam Bond, and we're gonna shift gears from Adam to Dr. Joe Trand. So we got good conversation. First, starting with Adam. Adam was in on Monday Night Talk this summer, talking about something that he had filed with the Supreme Judicial Court in regards to its a complaint, I believe, taken up against the state's probation department. Is that correct, Adam?
Yes, it's against the commissioner of probation.
And the individual, I guess, who is represented is a gentleman named Elmer Wing.
Yes, and while the case itself is a tiny thing, it's not a major issue. The issue of law is significant to a lot of defendants, both past, present, and future, in terms of how the law is carried out by the probation department.
As a part of it, and just to remind folks, I believe some of it is to information that is brought to court, whether it's information that is redacted or sealed files, and how one would know if a file is sealed or not, right?
As a criminal defendant, one of the things that you have a right to under both 26A of the general laws and under Rule 14 created by the SJC, which is a rule of court, is that upon motion of the defendant, the judge, shall order the probation department to turn over the record of any prospective witnesses identified by the probation department, which, if you look at the history of the rule, it was amended in 2014 essentially to make this type of discovery mandatory. And it was discussed in the context of giving a criminal defendant confrontation rights, the ability to confront his accusers by seeing what criminal records they may or may not have.
Right.
What the probation department did was hand me a record, and it had a little S in the upper right-hand corner that said records were sealed. So I only got a partial record. The argument, I then said I want the whole record, and that's what ended up going up to the full bench. The issue that I was raising was the word record is a defined term. It was defined by the SJC in its own rule as being all complaints, indictments, and dispositions. In fact, they made it broader than what the state did. The state in the statute said prior convictions, which is a much narrower group. So when the court went out there and promulgated the rule to sort of work with what the legislature told it had to do, it broadened it to complaints, indictments, and dispositions, which is a much broader disclosure. My argument was that because the rule and the statute did not say records except for those which are sealed, that the word record meant the whole set, and it didn't exclude the subset. In fact, I found another statute where they defined record in a different context that was not applicable here, where record was defined as, all of these things except for sealed records. So the legislature knew how to say when they didn't want sealed records to be turned over, but they didn't say it in this statute, and the court didn't say it in its rule. So therefore, we ended up in a fight and an argument before the SJC.
What was it like? And again, just so folks know, it's a SJC docket number 11842, and I had a chance to kind of skim through and watch as you were before the full bench. First and foremost, I mean, you're a gentleman you're used to being in court, but what was it like being in the state's highest court and at least preparing an argument on this subject?
It was an absolute honor, and it's one of the oldest oldest existing courts on the East Coast, and it was an honor to be before them. They were very attentive. They were very up to speed on what the issues were. And I always love being before multiple judges where all I get out is my first name and they're already into it.
Mm. Well, so what was what seemed to be their main issue or their arguments to counter what you had before them?
They were arguing policy. They were arguing, you know, I mean, I jokingly refer to it as the Full Employment of Felons Act, because essentially what it's intended to do is two things. It's intended, number one, to say to people that have been good for 10 years that after 10 years on a felony and after 5 years on a misdemeanor, you can have your record sealed, and the state allows you to walk around and say to employers, including the state and municipalities, you have no record.
Mm-hmm.
And that the probation department will report you as having no record. And the second aspect of it is so that sealed records, if the person who's gotten their record sealed gets into more trouble thereafter, that the sealed record can't be used against them in a court to show that, see, they're habitual. The sealed record can only be used once they get convicted of that later crime. They can use it in sentencing. So that they were arguing it as, wait a second, this was, you know, to give people a second chance in life. And, you know, how can you do this? It's going to have a chilling effect on people with sealed records, you know, bringing criminal complaints against people. And my response was, you know, the policy aspect of it is really not my issue, because you're not allowed to do an interpretation of a statute if the language is plain. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that over and over and over again. If the language is plain, you enforce it as written. We don't get into policy. We don't get into all these side arguments to try and interpret a word that's unambiguous. And what I said to the court was that if you go in there and you start to interpret record as being actually some subset of record, then what else in the statute doesn't mean what it says? The shall order probation to do it means shall order? Does it mean may order? What else does it mean what it says? And as I said to the court, I don't make the policy behind these rules. The legislature does. And the difficulty that I have is that if the decision comes back where they've reinterpreted record to mean something different than what the plain meaning says, you now are basically beginning to promote the concept of judicial tyranny. And what that basically means is, because your legislature is the one that's supposed to legislate, and your judiciary is the one who's supposed to enforce, when you have a judiciary that begins to legislate, you now have the ability of having a set of judges in your highest court change the rules, change things on you.
Right.
In a way that means they become a governing body. And they're not representatives of the people. They're judges. The state representatives, as their name implies, are representatives of the people and the policies of this state. And the judges cannot simply overturn something that's plain simply because they don't like the impact of it. That may have been the impact intended by the legislature.
Okay. Again, we are speaking with Attorney Adam Bond, and he recently, figuratively speaking, had his day in Supreme Judicial Court before the bench, arguing for a good half an hour. Well, arguing might be a strong term, but at least stating his case. So what happens? You've had a chance to address this, to be heard. Is it a matter of them writing an opinion? Is it a matter that you'll hear back from them? Will you have another turn in front of the bench? Or is it just a matter of seeing what they determined from your conversation with them?
Well, they're going to, it was 17 minutes, not a half hour, but that's all right.
Okay.
But what's going to happen is they're going to write a decision. And when they write a decision, I'm going to review it. And if I'm unhappy with it, I'm going to consider whether or not that is a basis for a petition for certiorari up to the U.S. Supreme Court, because it is a decision of the highest state court on what I believe to be constitutional grounds. And I was asked at the hearing, what constitutional issues do you have? Well, one of them is due process. And they said, how is that? And I said, well, your process says I get X. You gave me something less than X, and you won't give me X. Therefore, the process has been violated. I have a violation of due process. And that goes to my right of confrontation, which is another constitutional protection, and it also violates the state constitution. So my view is that if it turns out to go against me, I'm going to do a petition for cert.
What happens now? So what happens after that petition? What do you wait for?
And I wait to see if the 9 judges of the U.S. Supreme Court decide they want to sit there and bring me up to torture me too.
And is that how much more elevated does that make this situation if you do appear before the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, it certainly makes it more fun. I've appeared there before. I haven't argued there, but I've appeared there before on the merits beyond a petition for cert. But it certainly would give me an opportunity to argue there see if I can get the enforcement of the rules back on track, because I really do think this is a significant issue to not only people in the past who haven't even noticed the S in the upper right-hand corner of the record they're given, who may not have had full opportunity to see the background record. And the place where it's most important, for example, is not in a case like mine, which is a minor case. It's important, for example, where someone is accused of some kind of a violent crime, of a crime against person, because if you can argue that the other person was the first aggressor, you can actually go farther back into the records to show a tendency towards violence. And how many murder cases or battery cases have gone forward without the person being able to see the sealed record to be able to determine whether or not there's a tendency towards violence to give themselves a first aggressor defense?
So I guess I would ask you this, is what did you feel was the most interesting comment or question that you received from the bench? And was it a comment that you expected? Yeah, that they might have telegraphed you, you kind of knew they were going to ask this, or that it might have came from a different direction that you didn't think that it would be asked, but you were ready for it?
Well, I mean, I guess I'd have to say it this way. The court, and it's typical of multi-judge courts, the court sat there and, as soon as I got my name out, began to batter me. When the DA's office got up there, the Commonwealth got up there, and when the probation department got up there, and I forgot to mention, I was arguing against 2 lawyers. Each one of them, when they got up, they got battered by the court in the opposite direction. So, to me, some of the questions that were interesting were the ones that were going to the other side. Mm. Like, why is this person with the sealed records rights somehow or another more important than a defendant's rights?
Right.
And that was asked by a couple of judges on the bench that surprised me. And in fact, one judge just turned and said, to the Commonwealth, look, I don't see how these 2 rules even have a relationship to one another. I see one rule as being a criminal defense rule, a confrontation rule, and I see the other one as being something dealing with a policy of trying to bring back non-recidivists into the fold of the community by wiping out their records. I don't see the connection between the 2, and I thought that was a very astute question by the justices. But don't get me wrong, every question asked was a smart question. I don't know that every question that was asked had a correct conclusion wrapped behind it.
Right.
But because mine was simple. The words say what they say, and the legislature, when it wrote what it said, meant what it said and said what it meant. Which somebody, it's funny, they were attributing that. They were attributing
it's
that
like a Dr. Seuss. Yeah, I got a Dr. Seuss immediately as soon as you were saying it. So,
but it's not. It's out of a U.S. Supreme Court decision.
Okay, well, Dr. Seuss got it from somewhere then, obviously.
So I got you. It's out of the Kachiri decision from the U.S. Supreme Court in 2009.
Okay, well, we get just a couple of moments left here. So, is there a time frame? Do they have kind of a window in which they have to put together, their thesis on this conversation, or there is no time frame?
They have as long as a piece of string.
Really? Elaborate.
They just have as long as a piece of string. Whatever length it is, it is.
Okay.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the court below was kind enough to issue a stay of proceedings until such time as this issue was decided, which is a very nice thing. Because it's, like I said, this is a very minor issue in terms of the offense involved. It's just, it's a minor thing. The issue is much, much larger than the case itself. But, you know, it's funny. In the law, you find some of the most interesting legal issues emanating from some of the most minor of cases.
Good to know. If folks wanted to reach out to you, they're looking for an attorney, or maybe... maybe there might be somebody else who might want to have you in to discuss. We do have other media outlets that pay attention to what we do here from time to time. How would you be able? How would they be able to reach you?
Well, you know, that's fine. You're basically giving me an opportunity to plug myself. I'm in Middleboro. I'm at 1 North Main Street, and it's in Middleboro, Mass. And it's 508-946-1165. I give free consultations. Because I've never believed that you should charge somebody for something that you don't know what you're doing yet. That's just me.
Okay.
And I do a variety of areas of law, you know, criminal defense, personal injury, wills and trusts, and just recently, beginning the large foray into Indian law.
Well, that sounds like a conversation for another day that we're definitely going to have to book you and have you in to discuss.
I think that's, I was trying to give you a segue.
Excellent. Well, there he is, Adam Bond. Adam, thank you so much for joining us for the segment.
And it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure listening to your sultry tones.
And I might want to just throw in one other little plug. Adam and his wife, Victoria, can be heard. They are, other than being a fine attorney, Adam also is a talk show host himself. Can be heard on 1530 AM WVBF every Thursday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. How's that for a plug?
That's a good plug.
There he is. Well, thank you for joining us, Adam.
I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. You are listening to 95.9 WATD Monday Night Talk.